Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Hi, everybody. Hello there. Nice to have you back with us again. I'm Doug Llewellyn. It really is nice to have you with us. And it's a real delight to have our guest, Dr. Sherry Campbell, back. Dr. Campbell was with us last week, as you may know, in our conversation with Jim Masters here at CUTV News Radio. And we were so excited. We asked her to come back again today. She, by the way, is a licensed psychotherapist with nearly 30 years of clinical training and experience in treating so many different kinds of orders and disorders, and extreme pain and grief, you name it, she really has dealt with it. And she likes to say that she's solution-focused, not problem-focused. She is licensed. She's done this for so many years. I want to point out, through her years of training, the kinds of things that a psychotherapist deals with, because many people really may not understand exactly what a psychotherapist does. You hear the term, well, I'm going to see my therapist today, and you may look at someone and say, well, you look perfectly right, and you're all together. Why would you be seeing a psychotherapist? What kind of problems does a psychotherapist deal with? Well, if you listen to the kinds of things that our guest, Dr. Campbell, has dealt with, you will begin to grasp really how difficult her job is, because she points out through her years of training, many years of training, she's treated a variety of diagnoses, from personality disorders to depression, anxiety disorders, addiction, and thought disorders. But she's worked with the human being. She's worked with eating disorders, low self-esteem, body image issues, self-hatred, how about that, guilt, grief, trauma, life-threatening diseases, such as cancer and AIDS, not fitting in. Someone doesn't fit in, so they go see a therapist. Bullying, a big issue. Abandonment, loneliness, sex issues, isolation, not feeling good enough about yourself, a lack of motivation, fear, sadness, death and dying, and hopelessness. And she's also worked with people in their most successful moments, glorious highs, and dreams achieved beyond imagination. She says it's always important to see the good. Therapy is not just about the negative. But I must tell you, it is fascinating to hear all of the kinds of things a therapist like Dr. Campbell deals with. She's fascinating, and she's really interesting. Dr. Campbell, it's nice to have you back with us again. Dr. Sherry Campbell, by the way, she is based in Irvine, California, out in Southern California. How are you today, Dr. Campbell?
I'm doing excellent, Doug. Thank you for having me back on the show. I'm so excited you guys wanted me back, and hearing your introduction of me makes me want to go to my therapist for all I work with every day. So
I didn't know people could go to a therapy for so many issues, but you're out there devoted to help people, and I want to point out something. You are a big presence on Facebook, and as you point out, you have more than 60,000 fans who follow you, and you blog on Facebook every day. You post videos mm-hmm. there once a week, so you're actively involved in trying to talk to the general public about what you do and what a therapist does. I can't help, but and I also understand you see as many as 10 to 12 patients a day. And when I hear that, I think to myself, mm-hmm. what's it like when you go home at night after having spent all day listening to people tell you about their problems? You must want to go home and have a drink.
Home and I have a run. I go home and run. I need an hour break at least between my day and then also I'm a single mom of a daughter, so I want to let that down before I spend time with my daughter and connect with her. I need to let it go. So running is sort of my release, or actually sometimes I don't run if it's dark outside, but you know, anything in the gym for me where I can just kind of let it down and I separate. But really, I've got to tell you, as negative as the stuff sounds that I hear, I'm a person who helps people to find ways through it. So really what I'm doing every day is positive. I think the perception is I'm getting dumped on all day, and I have those days. I mean, there's days that my ears feel a little bit raped, but, you know, I ultimately am looking at someone going, okay, you're here. I meet them where they are, and then I want to figure out how to get them out of that and through that to a better place, you know, helping them to have hope and develop their character, their resiliency, and things like that.
Let me ask you a question. I did not hear your discussion with Jim last week, and you may have gone into this. I'm just wondering, number one, when you began your studies and got your PhD in clinical psychology, did you realize that this is what your daily life was going to be like and this is what you were in for?
I did. Actually, I was in therapy young, so I had an idea of what it was like to be on the couch, which I think is important, and I knew it was what I wanted to do. And I also, you know, going through a PhD program, I did 4,000 hours of clinical work and residency work. So I got to kind of travel around in different areas and see what area I really liked and what area I didn't like or where I'd want to fit. And I found that I just wanted to be in private practice and work with the people that I wanted. And it's really, for me, it's a dream job. I absolutely love what I do. I don't have the Sunday blues. Like, I look forward to my Mondays because I think people are so interesting and I'm just a lover of the human being. But I have to tell you, the misperception is that unhealthy people come to therapy, and actually healthy people come to therapy to try and deal with the unhealthy people in their lives that are sort of short-circuiting them. So that's sort of a misperception around therapy. So I'm actually dealing with healthy people, if that makes sense.
Well, that is interesting, because one would wonder why a healthy person would want to go see a therapist. You just mentioned that you had seen a therapist earlier in your life and you kind of knew what it was about. I was inclined to ask you, do therapists ever have bad days and think they need therapy as well? Or do you know all the answers because you've had the education?
I'm someone, I see a therapist currently.
Interesting.
I see a therapist right now. I think a really good therapist would see a therapist. Because ultimately, first of all, I would never want to follow someone who'd never suffered, right? And I feel like I can only take people in their character or in their life or in their self-development as far as I've gone myself. So I look at my therapy as just continuing education. The more deeply I know myself, the better I am able to be empathic and more deeply help someone else to know themselves. So honestly, if you're shopping for a therapist, one of the first questions you should ask is if your therapist is in therapy. And if they're not, I would question seeing them.
Wow, that's an amazing answer. Because I think, and what do I know? You know, I'm not in the field, but I would assume there are a lot of people who feel fine and don't think they have any need to see a therapist. What point in someone's daily routine life, when we all have ups and downs, you all have problems, everybody does, at what point do you think it's advisable for them to turn to a therapist for help? When do they know it would be a good thing for them to do? How do you answer
when they've
that?
Tried every other option and it hasn't worked, right? So I get people into me that have really tried everything in their lives, and it's usually around relationships. Usually what comes in my office, whether it's bullying, a parent, and I've got a cutter, or I'm dealing with an affair or whatever. Typically, what's in my office are really good empathic people on the other side of someone who is more narcissistic, over-controlling, overbearing, and they are being constantly manipulated, and then they struggle to figure out, are they right? Is someone else right? So it's a constant unwinding of a ball of confusion. And then when they kind of get liberated into understanding that this is where they stop and someone else starts, they can start to set better boundaries on the unhealthy people that have broken them down to get them into my office.
You know, you mentioned the word narcissist. You have written that you are a lover and appreciator of all humans, except narcissists. And narcissists are people who love themselves and think they're great, right?
Actually, they don't love themselves at all. They don't really love. A narcissist is more about manipulation, power, and control than they are anything to do with love. So they are agenda-oriented people. They are not relationship-oriented. Everything is undermined. Nothing is straight. You know, they sort of love bomb you, and they idealize you. Then they devalue you, discard you, and suck you back in to take you down that ladder over and over and over again, around and around and around. So the abuse, I mean, intermittent kindness is certainly a part of that. And it's not that I don't, they are the real patient who probably needs the treatment, but they never stay in therapy because they're never wrong. So the idea that they love themselves is false. They don't love, they might like the reflection in the mirror, but they're more of a billboard to build and admire, they think, than they are a human being to love.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that because I actually looked up the word to see exactly how the dictionary defined it. And it said, a narcissist is someone having an excessive or erotic interest in oneself and one's physical appearance, like a narcissistic actress, for example. That's kind of really what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually more than that, though, because not everyone is an extroverted narcissist. You know, there's covert narcissism as well, and they tend to be more in the martyr role or very passive-aggressive. But ultimately, they are about power, control, and manipulation more than they are anything about being respectful. They're sort of disrespectful, insensitive, controlling. They're bullies. They threaten a lot. You try to give them the right answer, you end up with brain salad. They throw tantrums, you know, they rage, they can be very hypocritical, they kind of project all of their negatives onto you as if that's who you are. You know, you'll tell them something private about yourself, and the next thing you know, it's being exploited. They're condescending, they act superior, they're demanding, you know, they don't listen. It's almost as if they got arrested between the ages of 2 and 5, where it's appropriate to do some of that stuff. But when you're an adult dealing with that, you're expecting there to be another adult. But what they really lack is empathy. They don't really care about anybody but themselves. So they only care how things affect them. It doesn't really matter to them what they did to hurt you.
Wow. That's a great dictionary definition. We should have written that down and put that in the dictionary. That's real good. Let me talk to you about what a session with you is like. When someone finally gets the nerve, the confidence, I guess it is, to call you up and say, look, I'd like to come talk to you. What's that first session like? What do you do?
Well, I let them know. They fill out my paperwork, right? So I get an idea. They do a checklist, and I get an idea of what we're looking for, what I'm looking at. And I ask them questions about what they filled out to get a scope of what the problem is. But I let them know that I'm not a passive listener. You know, there's a lot of shrinks that play the role of, oh, so you're feeling sad. Well, I don't want someone to pay my fee for me to tell them what they already know. I let them know I'm going to be very active in our sessions and that they're likely going to have homework and they're there to get better. I mean, they're paying me because they want to get better. I'm a good listener. That's part of it. But the other part of it is, what are they going to do about it? And they're there for feedback and they're there for solutions. And so I go far beyond the listening role in my office. And most people like that. I mean, I have a waiting list out the door. And there's other therapists or other patients that would not like that about me. They would just want to be listened to. So I look at myself as somebody who's more on the higher level tier of when people are ready to be active, not just coddled.
And you talk about relationships being a huge part of what brings clients in to see you. How do you deal with heartbreak?
Well, gosh, heartbreak, you know, I found this, that grief isn't really, the depth of grief has more to do with how deeply you loved rather than how long you were with someone. And so anytime there's heartbreak in there, there's a self-abuse that goes along because you end up feeling abandoned because that person is still alive walking around on earth who's choosing not to be with you. Whereas if there's a death, unless it's a suicide, there typically is not that self-abuse. It wasn't a rejection that someone died. So I deal with both types of heartbreak. They're very different, but I deal with business heartbreak, financial heartbreak, reputation heartbreak. You know, there's all kinds of heartbreak. And what I always tell my patients is that there's value in the valley. You know, that if you've lost something, you've got to go find yourself wherever the hole is that other thing is gone, and you have to build yourself from where you're planted. But that hurting and patience are part of heartbreak. And heartbreak is in every single person in my office on some level.
And when do you find that clients come to you? And I assume you see men as well as women, right? I mean, it's not.
Oh,
I think someone might assume you see more women,
yeah.
But You do men well, right. What about men who've had a disappointment in their career, maybe they've lost their job, that kind of situation in their life? Is that an appropriate time to come in for therapy?
Yeah, I mean, I see a lot of men, actually, and my men usually come into me around midlife, and or they come into me because they're having relationship issues. When there's job issues, when they come in, I do a little bit more of a coaching role than I do actually a therapy role. Very business-minded. I'm one of the top writers for Entrepreneur magazine, so it's something that I will attract a lot of men from that area, and it's more about resiliency and character when it comes to business heartbreak, and also knowing that, you know, money, if that's the God you worship, that's going to be a very temporary God, that you've got to really know the why of what you're doing. And if you don't love what you're doing, I encourage anyone in business heartbreak to take a second look at maybe they need to take a different path. But I've had workplace bullies. You know, I've had someone bullied from the workplace come in. I've had that. I've seen a lot of heartbreak when it comes around business that hasn't anything to do with money. Sometimes it's just what's going on with the coworker situation or the office gossip, you know, so I get to deal with a lot of different issues. I mean, it's amazing what comes in.
Listening, you mentioned the workplace bully. How do you instruct someone to deal with that? What can you tell them?
Well, what I tell them is to research everything they can on narcissism, because usually if there's a bully, there's a narcissist. And usually the bully actually has HR wrapped around their fingers too. A bully creates a certain amount of fear around them. But the less attention you give a bully, typically the better. They'll go prey on someone else. But I actually have them use their posture and their body language much more than I have them use confrontation or anything verbal. And I have them put nothing in writing. And that seems to have worked very well so far with the people that I've done, whether they're bullied in school or the workplace, is once a bully picks up that your vibe has changed and you can use your body language to overcompensate for your fears, the bully tends to pass away and go to someone else. So, but it really, in the workplace, it only takes one toxic person to bring down an entire team of people. You know, I mean, they can be that toxic. So whoever's above is going to have to at some point want to get that person out. But even sometimes CEOs are afraid of those bullies because they don't want to get, you know, into some sort of a firestorm that a bully can manipulate you into thinking that they will. But to remind everybody, most bullies, their bark is a lot worse than their bite.
Yeah. You know, looking at the list of different kinds of problems that you've dealt with, and boy, it seems like you've covered almost everything. I can't help but wonder, do you ever get stumped with an issue? Does someone ever come to you and you have to think twice about, my, this really is different?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And I'm humble enough to sometimes say, you know what, I don't know. So let me seek consultation or let me think about it for a night because, like,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, I would say that there are so many different issues. I mean, the first thing that would come up for me would be there are some sexual things that will come in that I'll kind of be stumped. You know, swinging has come in my office before, and, you know, I'm just not real familiar with the swinging community, but I know it doesn't do well for the marriages that come in. Or, you know, their child gets a hold of porn or they catch their parents swinging. I mean, it's a nightmare when that stuff comes in. And so there's times that I'm like, okay, that's when I listen, Doug, that's when I listen. And then I've got to do a little research to figure out what to do.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that because I'm convinced it must happen. But how long do you find it typically takes for you to help someone get over the main issue that brought them in? I mean, I know these issues you can't clear them up overnight. What is the relationship with a therapist like? How often do you typically see someone, and how long does that take?
I would say the average stay in therapy is 6 months to a year. I think if you do one good full year of very high quality therapy, then you can kind of come back for tune-ups. I'm fortunate in that I feel just by my nature, I'm also sort of more of a coach, and I'll have people that I've seen on and off for 15 years. But I'm not a hoarder. I don't make people feel like they have to stay, but I always let them know they can return whenever they want. So I've had a lot of people go in and leave for a year and come back, and the go out again for another 3 years and come back and check in. And, you know, so I'm always there. I don't know that termination is always really real. And then there's, you know, there's people that come for a few weeks and it's enough and they go. So it's sort of individual and depending upon what the needs are of every patient.
You know, what I'm impressed with is that you really do make a presence. So people can learn a lot about you and learn and get advice from you from the blogs that you put on
yeah.
the internet. You have a big presence on Facebook. You write columns. You know, you give a lot of information away free, really, almost, if you want to point it that way. Why are you so active
yes.
in those fields?
Because I love people. I love people. And I'm a writer. I'm one of the top writers for Huffington Post. I've written a book already, and I'm writing another one right now, and I've got another one on the back burner. So I think, honestly, Doug, it's just a part of who I am. And I recognize that not everyone can afford therapy. And, you know, if you check out my Facebook page, I mean, it's not just me. They help each other. I ended up winning a huge award for this as well. I won a Beauty In, Beauty Out Award in California in 2015. Someone that follows me nominated me. I didn't even know it existed. And it was set up like the Oscars, and I had to give a speech, and it's for your normal person helping other people. It was really a beautiful experience, and I love to do it. I'm actually quite introverted in person, but I'm really open if I write. So my blog is as helpful to me.
You talk about your writing. You've written a book called Loving Yourself, The Mastery of Being Your Own Person. That's the first book that's out there. Tell me a little bit about that book. And where is it available? Obviously Amazon, I would assume. Am I right?
Yeah, Amazon and mostly online. It's been out for quite a while. You know, it's my personal journey through my own healing. And I think the most important thing that we can do is master who we are as an individual. You know, if we are to look at the political culture, if you're not happy, things are, then you've got to be a governor of one. If you're in your marriage and you don't like what's going on, then you need to learn to manage yourself. So often we want to fix other people and change other people so that we'll be happy. It just doesn't work that way. There's no amount of us changing another person that person could change enough to fill every hole that we have. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
My book is really about my own pain. The journey that I went through and what I learned was if I can be a master of me, know me well, and that would never be an event, I'm still in the process of knowing myself because as I age and my life changes, there's still more of me to know and it will be never ending, that you actually have a real shot at genuine happiness because you can be vulnerable and still love yourself. You know, so if we love ourselves, not in a way of being self-obsessed like a narcissist, but just try to love who we are, flaws and all, then we are much more available to other people. You know, the more perfect someone seems, the more unapproachable they are. The more human and flawed someone is, the more approachable they are. So embrace your wholeness because it's part of being happy and real.
You know, it's interesting because you've written that you see yourself as somewhat of a coach, and I know that the field of coaching has become huge, and there mm-hmm. are coaches that can help someone in almost every aspect of their life, in the business world and their personal world. So would it be fair to say that, you know, somebody could say they want to go see you because you're a coach and you can help them rather than as a therapist who's going to help them? I mean, is there a...
Absolutely.
There's a difference in that term, you know?
There is a difference, and there are people that I'll coach based upon loving yourself that have nothing to do with me being a licensed psychologist, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's many authors that are not licensed psychologists that coach people based on their book. So I'm able to be a little more flexible in who I treat and how I treat because I've got something else out there, you know, in the world that allows me to coach. And I just think I was an Olympic hopeful athlete as a little girl, and I'm sort of type A and driven that way anyway. So when I see something and I feel like I'm an expert at patterns of behavior, it's almost like CSI work in my office, but it's mental and emotional. And we're looking at the patterns of behavior and how we respond and how we can advocate for ourselves. You know, it's really being a therapist is the hope would be that you're not there to feel more anxious and feel judged or pathologized or that you're going to just be talking woe is me about all the crappy stuff going on in your life, you would hope that someone would be advocating for you to get better and that you could go out and be on your own. You know, and so that's sort of how I look at my job.
Well, that's pretty fascinating. I'm interested to know if you work with people other than in-person counseling sessions. I mean, in terms of coaching, you know, you can work with a coach on the telephone or in Skype. Do you work with people that way?
Absolutely. I coach someone in London. I coach people all over. You know, I coach them around business. That's another thing I can do. I can coach people. I write for Entrepreneur. You know, I'm one of their top writers. And so I get a lot of people asking for coaching. And so the coaching piece of it gets me out from the umbrella of a license, you know, and it allows
right.
me a little bit more freedom. The coaching is more superficial. You know, it's more based in the now and on what the current problem is at work and or in other areas. But I enjoy both. I really do. And I can be remote, which is wonderful.
Well, I should point out your website because that's the best way to get in touch with you and to learn more about you. It's a great website. It's Sherry Campbell. Sherry, of course, is Sherrie Campbell, CAMPBELL, PhD.com. Pardon me. So the website address again, SherrieCampbellPhD.com. That'll get you right to Sherry's website. And you can learn all about attention, you know, all about her, and also learn how to get in touch with her. What do you most like about what you do?
That every hour is different, and that I think people are just so interesting and resilient, and it's inspiring, and I believe so deeply in the capacity of the human spirit to overcome. And I've seen depths of willingness show up in people through my coaching that they didn't have before. And it's beautiful. I mean, truly, it's just a beautiful, I'm so lucky. I could not be luckier to do what I do. And the money that I make is really a byproduct of just really enjoying traveling with people that need help and support.
And do you have advice for someone who looks for a therapist? How do you know when the therapist one goes to see is the right therapist? I assume that not every therapist is perfect for each individual. You know, there has to be a match. Do you know when that match is right for you?
I think that if you have to know what your need is, if your need is to
mm-hmm.
just be listened to, then you need to go find a therapist who will be very attuned to being more quiet and just listening. If you really want somebody who's going to advocate for you and give you direct advice or guidance and help you to see patterns, and you would want to go to someone more like me, you know, and I think you have to interview. I would just interview. I'd go online and I would look at all kinds of different people's profiles from Psychology Today to everywhere and look at what fits and give a call and go sit with those therapists so you can find the best match. You'll know in your gut. People will know. You know, we know when we like someone and when we don't pretty instantly.
Yeah, no, that's pretty true. How can someone follow you on Facebook? Give me instructions on that.
So you just go to Facebook and you put my name in, Sherry Campbell, PhD. So facebook.com/Sherry Campbell PhD. And they just like the page. They just push the like button and my feed will come to them every day. And my Thankful Thursday videos, plus every article I write for Entrepreneur, every TV appearance, every radio show, everything will be on there. It's always posted.
So all the information is there. Well, you know, you have such an amazing career, and where, you know, do you have goals for where you're going in your career? What do you see in the future for Sherry Campbell?
Well, actually, I see in the future less private practice and more speaking, more public speaking, more TV. I had my own radio show for a little while. I enjoyed that. But right now I'm really focused on writing a book that's going to be phenomenal and just doing more of that stuff. I would like to affect, in some ways, more than one person at a time. And so more speaking opportunities or TV, things like that, radio, are next. They're lining up already. So I'm pretty excited.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that, and I think I'm glad you're excited. I'm excited for you. Our guest has been
Thank
Dr. Sherry Campbell. Dr. Campbell, thank you so much. She's based out in Irvine, California, but you know, she can be available to you to get help if you go on her website, or you can follow her on Facebook, of course. The website again, SherryCampbellPhD.com. Dr. Campbell, thanks. It's been a delight having you as a guest. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye.
You're welcome. And that's it, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. Thanks for being with us. See you next time. Bye for now.